I had a strange experience Wednesday night this past week. I woke up in the middle of the night. That part's not the strange experience. That happens almost every night. But this time, I woke up in the middle of Wednesday. Oh, actually, I guess it was Thursday morning. I woke up Thursday morning at 2 o'clock. And as soon as I opened my eyes, I mean, I don't know if I opened my eyes or not, actually, but as soon as I was semi-conscious, I was aware that there was a line, a sentence in my head that I was thinking about. It was just there. It doesn't happen to me very often. No, maybe not ever. And this sentence that was in my head was very simple, but it was a perfect summary for a Sunday sermon on baptism. It was amazing. And I thought, whoa, I should get up and write that down. But you know, I'm kind of lazy at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I didn't do it. And you know what happens when you think, I should write that down in the middle of the night, and then you think, I'll do it when I get up. What happens to that sentence? Gone, right? But you know what? When I woke up at my real time, which is around 4 o'clock in the morning, guess what? It was right there in my head. So I got up and I bustled downstairs and I wrote out this very simple but very important sentence about baptism. The sentence that came to me in the middle of the night Thursday morning was this. Baptism is about, and so great, a three-point sermon. Each word, each point gets one word, and each word starts with a B. Ah, I could never be that cool. I don't know where that came from. A three-point sermon on baptism, even, where every word begins with a B. Wow, bring it on. That's why I get paid the big bucks. Baptism is about belief, belonging, and burial. Belief, belonging, and burial. And the really cool thing about this three-point sermon outline, belief, belonging, and burial, is that I think each of these points is present in our gospel reading this morning from the Gospel of Matthew, because we read this morning the account of Jesus' baptism by John the Baptist. And it's there in this scripture, each of these things, belief, belonging, and baptism. First of all, Jesus comes to John the Baptist and says he wants to be baptized, and John kind of demurs a little bit and says, you know, this isn't how it should go. Like, you're the big chief. I'm just John the Baptist who's getting everybody ready for you to come. You should baptize me. You're the one with the real authority. You're the one with the real spirit. You're the one with the real insight. And Jesus says, no. And then he says, let it be so now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness. It is proper for us to fulfill in this way all righteousness. Jesus had a belief. He believed that there is a way that things work. He called it all righteousness. And he said that our task in life is to fulfill all righteousness. Now, I think it's important that we understand what that means. It doesn't just mean that we are to be obedient law keepers who go out there and grit our teeth and always do the right thing. Fulfilling all righteousness really means that we believe that our purpose as human beings, created in the image and likeness of God, our purpose as human beings is only one thing. Our purpose as human beings is to live in alignment with our true created nature as beings created in the image of God. That's what it means to fulfill the fullness of our destiny, of our created nature, of who we are as human beings. It means to live in tune with that which we believe to be fundamentally our nature as human beings. And it matters. It matters what you believe it means to be human. I'm not really terribly hung up on doctrine or dogma of Christianity. I think it's good to believe good, right things about the nature of God. But I really believe that it is vitally important, essential, to believe the right things about what it means to be human. I've just finished reading, you'll be glad to know, I started it over the Christmas holidays and managed to make it through 800 pages of Tom Bullock's biography of Adolf Hitler. And Adolf Hitler believed a number of terribly, terribly incorrect things about what it means to be human. He believed that the most human was the one who had the most power. And to have the most power meant to be the one who could impose your will and your desires and your needs upon everybody else and get them to conform. That's what it means to be truly human. He believed that to be truly human meant to be a part of the chosen, anointed Aryan race. And that everybody else was untermenschen. Everyone else was a subspecies of that one great category. And that the destiny of the Aryan people was to dominate all other races. He really genuinely believed that. He believed that Jewish people were a subspecies. They were untermenschen. They were below every other form of living being. It was a belief that he had from his earliest days. He wasn't alone in this belief. At that time in his life, he believed that it was the destiny of human beings to genetically control the species, the human species, so that it was important and it was part of the human task was to weed out those that were subhuman, those that were less worthy of attention and respect and rights, and to eliminate them. And that meant anybody, essentially, who looked different from what Hitler understood to be a good, Aryan, upstanding, blonde, nice-looking human being. All things that Hitler wasn't at all, but it didn't matter. Never confuse him with the facts and realities. And those beliefs shaped all of his behavior and caused the deaths of 60 million people. Those beliefs about what it means to be human impacted every decision and choice that he made and twisted the world community into this terrible, terrible tragedy that became the Second World War. It matters what you believe about what it means to be human. And this morning, two people stood up here with a wriggling toddler and a lovely little, she's not a toddler, what is she now? She's five. She's a kid. She's a real live kid. And they stood up and said, you know, what it means for these people to be human is that their lives are filled with love and beauty and truth and goodness right now, not later, not that we have to put it into them, but that it's there. And to be human is to discover that and to find that and to believe that that is true. And then to live in tune with that belief. So belief is terribly, terribly important. But it doesn't mean primarily that you have to get your doctrine of the Trinity right. I mean, it's nice if you can, but nobody has done yet for 2,000 years. So, you know, you can relax a little bit about that. But don't relax about what it means to be truly human. So that's belief. Baptism is about belief. But baptism is also about belonging. And here I'm kind of disappointed that we read that appointed for today is the baptism of Jesus. That appointed for today is Matthew's account of Jesus' baptism instead of Mark's. I don't know why it was chosen for this day that we should read Matthew's account of the baptism of Jesus, but it was, and nobody asked me. If I'd been asked, I would have said, let's read Mark. Because there's a subtle change that takes place when you go from the Markan version to the Matthean version. Okay? Mark is universally accepted as being the oldest of the four Gospels. Matthew came later, and there's a shift that takes place when we move from Mark to Matthew. So in Matthew's account, we read that when Jesus was baptized, he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And then Matthew says, and a voice came from heaven and said, this is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased. A voice came from heaven and said, this is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Who does it sound like that voice is for? Who's that voice speaking for? This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Who's the voice speaking for? Who's the voice addressing? Us. Everybody. The gathered community. Yes. But remember in Mark chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. When Jesus came up out of the water, immediately he, Jesus, saw the heavens opening and the Spirit descending on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven saying, you are my Son, my Beloved. With you I am well pleased. Who's this voice for? It's for Jesus. Jesus needed to hear, you are my Son, my Beloved. And Matthew's version is fine, but the point becomes, in Matthew's version, the point simply becomes to verify Jesus, to say, yeah, he's cool, he's okay, he's the big wig, he's the important one, he's my Son. And our prayer this morning that I was appointed to read, and I didn't change it this morning, which I sometimes do, picks this up and says, Eternal Father, who at the baptism of Jesus revealed him to be your Son, anointing him with the Holy Spirit. So the purpose of the baptism was to reveal the person of Jesus to the crowd. But in Mark's version, there's no indication that the crowd heard anything. It's Jesus who hears, because Jesus needs to know that he belongs to God. And this is going to become really important, because what's the very next thing that happens in Mark's account immediately after Jesus is baptized? The Spirit drove him out into the wilderness, where he was tempted for 40 days and 40 nights. Tempted to exercise power in his own best interest. Tempted to give in to his ego drive and his desire to be the big one. Tempted to meet his own needs using his power given to him by God. When we are faced with temptation, we need to know where we belong. And baptism tells us that we belong to God. We belong to love. We belong to truth. You say, where's your home? And it doesn't matter where you are. You can say, right here, I am home. I am home because I know that I am living in God's Spirit. I am living in this place of love and truth and goodness and beauty that is my true nature. Now, at this point, I go over here and he's gone. I took up the little baby, who's not a baby anymore, and he's a toddler, and is downstairs having fun with Dad. And I would carry him up and down the center of the aisle, and you know what I would do? I would point to him and say, "This is who you are. This is your true identity." And what this tells you is that you belong to love. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter. I mean, what's Lachlan ever done? I don't know. He's kind of run around and he hasn't achieved great things. Hasn't made a lot of money yet. No? No money? Hasn't conquered great empires. He's just been a baby and a little toddler. He's fallen down and bruised himself from time to time. He's made noise. He's probably woken his parents up from time to time at night. Like, that's what babies do. They have nothing to prove their worth. Nothing that makes them meaningful in the eyes of the world. They're just useless little blobs, right? They are profoundly beautiful and filled with truth and light and love, and they belong just because they're alive. And you know, I said in the service, in the baptism, I said that it's important to me that the parents give up their child to me, not to me, but to God. I mean, you get the point. I'm not God. I represent God. They give the child up to me as a representative of God. Okay? Got that? Let's be clear. But it's important because Lachlan doesn't belong to his parents. He doesn't belong to them. He's not theirs. He's not their property. He belongs to love. He belongs to beauty and truth and goodness and light. He belongs to God. He is beloved. Because he is beloved by God. There's nothing he needs to do to earn it, nothing he can do to earn it. And there's actually nothing he can do to get out of it. God's love is not like my love. My love tends to be somewhat conditional. You know, I love you if you're nice to me. If you upset me, I'll cut you off at the knee. No, it's okay. But my love does tend to be conditional. I like things to go well. I like you to make things go well for me. God's love is utterly and completely unconditional. We have been given this gift of life. And we belong because we have that gift. That's all there is to know. So baptism is about belief. And baptism is about belonging. And then the last one that's kept you all awake until we got to this point, baptism is about burial. You know, I love infant baptism. And I love adult baptism, grown-up baptism. I love them both. I love either. I don't care how you do it or when you do it or whatever. It doesn't matter. They say different things a little bit. The emphasis, certainly, in infant baptism is on the belonging part. This child belongs because this child embodies and contains the gift of life. The emphasis in adult baptism is a little bit more on the believing part because the person being baptized makes a statement of faith and belief for themselves, although it's present here in the parents making those statements of faith and belief on behalf of their child. So they're both there. They're both important. The one thing that really disappoints me about the way we baptize in our tradition, and I try, you know, I did my best this morning, but is we don't use enough water. Dave was suggesting actually that I could do an immersion baptism this morning and we could just go outside and do it in the parking lot. And just stand there and we'd be immersed. We'd certainly be wet. But I really think that there's an image on the front of your pew leaflet. And I think that's important. This is an image. It's not an actual photograph from the event. But it's a depiction of Jesus being baptized by John the Baptist. And the beauty of this is that I can't really tell. I don't know. Do you think he's coming up or going down? Going down? Doesn't matter. He's either going up or coming down. It's hard to tell. But the important thing is that he's gone down. And when he went down, he went under the water. He was buried. And when you're buried, what are you? Dead. You're dead. That's the point of baptism. If we are going to discover what it means to be truly human, if we are going to live with that belief of what it means to be truly human, if we are going to discover our true belonging, if we are going to discover our true identity as the beloved of God, there's a bunch of stuff that we're going to have to die to, that we're going to have to let go of, that we're going to have to give up. There's a lot of false beliefs that we're going to have to give up and surrender and let go of. There's a lot of things that we looked to in the past to kind of shore up our sense of identity that we're going to have to let go of and give up and surrender. And to do that means, in a sense, spiritually, to die. We need to die to that small self that is part of all of our beings and that sometimes, somewhere, becomes ignited in the smallest child. We're going to need to turn from that and choose to open to the deep, profound richness of what it means to be truly human. Turn to that reality that Jesus lives in us. That the beauty, truth, goodness, and light embodied in the person of Jesus is our true nature. And that when we let go of all that other stuff, when we let go of our determination to function perfectly on the surface, when we let go of that, that's when we emerge up out of the water into our true nature as beloved, cherished children of love. There are so many things that lead us away from this awareness. There are so many voices out there that cause us to chase off after other ways of establishing ourselves, of making ourselves feel important and significant and powerful in the world. And they're all lies. They're all things from which God calls us to turn. We might be buried with Christ and live in the Spirit as God's beautiful, cherished, beloved children, sharing the nature and identity of Jesus and living in the purpose of His love for all of us. So baptism is about belief, belonging, and burial. I know it's got to be true because it came to me at 2:00. In the morning.